This is Cave Scott Allen of OTCO.com.
This is Kevin Dente.
This is John Galloway.
This is Scott Kuhn from LazyCoder.com.
Hello and welcome to Herding Code. Today is January the 14th, 2013. We're talking to Steve Robbins and Andreas Håkansson. How do you say
Håkansson.
This? Okay.
Close enough.
Because the A with the O on top is an O.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, great. And we're talking to you guys again about NancyFX. So we last talked to you roughly October of 2011. So wanted to catch up on what's new and exciting in Nancy. For those that haven't listened, Herding Code 123 was our first discussion with you. Can one of you give a high-level overview of what NancyFX is?
Sure. It's a web framework, C# web framework, although it does work in VB, although we don't really support that, EVB. It's inspired by Sonata on Ruby. So for those that aren't aware of what Sonata is, it's sort of a very lightweight syntax. It brings the root definitions for defining your routes close to the code it's actually going to execute, which sounds kind of complicated, but it gives you sort of a very concise syntax. So we were inspired initially by the Sonata syntax, but since then it's kind of grown quite significantly into its own thing. Nancy has always has what we call the super duper happy path, where things should just work straight out of the box. The syntax should be nice, it should be easy to use, but on the flip side, you should be able to easily reconfigure things if the defaults don't work for you. So that's about it.
So some top things I took out of our discussion last time. One, definitely that super duper happy path, which I believe you have copyrighted, patented, and trademarked, right? I'd also asked about I kind of tried to bait you into comparing with WCF Web API, as it was called back then, and now ASP.NET Web API. And you were saying, you know, really there's, you know, some, you know, differences and whatever, but the real focus is just on that syntax. It's a fun, easy to use syntax, productive, you know, good syntax. Is that still what you would say is kind of the main, you know, thing that you would describe it as?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's difficult to talk syntax on a podcast, obviously.
Sure.
But I think the main drivers behind Nancy is to kind of try and make web development fun on .NET. So that's not to say you can't build proper stuff with it. That's not to say it's not robust and complete. But I think most of the people that have tried Nancy and have liked Nancy, it's because you can do an awful lot with very little code. And the code that you do write is expressive and it is actually quite fun to use. Now, feature-wise, if you had a tick list between Web API and Nancy and, you know, most of the other web stacks on .NET, you could probably write the same application to just about all of them. But the program model and the feeling behind the code is different.
The web only has like a finite set of things you can do, like the HTTP specs and stuff like that. But there is an infinite amount of ways that you can do it. And Nancy just happens to be one of those ways.
Okay. Yeah, since we'd talked, there was a Code 52 project, Idea Strike, and I think there was another one too where we used Nancy, and it was fun to actually, you know, work on it firsthand. And I agree, it was, you know, fun, lightweight, easy. And one thing I'd taken away from our previous call too was that, you know, you can fit a Nancy, you know, working Nancy code in a single tweet, which, you know, tells you something. So let's catch up on what's new since then. So can you give us some highlights?
I think we were at 0.7, version 0.7 last time. I think that's correct. And we just recently put out 0.15. So obviously there's been quite a lot of releases since, and so many contributions from the community and so much code going in from both Steven and me. But a couple of the major things probably is the built-in diagnostics website that ships built into Nancy that you can use from your own application to profile it or whatever. We have added content negotiation in. We added just recently convention-based localization support. Can you think of anything else, Steven? I mean, there's so much that's gone in since last time.
Yeah, I think they're probably the main headline features. I mean, we're actually up to, 98 contributors now? And there's probably a few thousand commits gone in since the last since the last call, but I think they're some of the big features that we've got now.
Okay, so let's talk through some of those. With diagnostics, what sort of things am I diagnosing? Is this like an admin level thing where I can get an idea of tracing requests or of seeing, you know, efficiency or diagnosing problems, or what sort of things do I get there?
So diagnostics is a website built into Nancy itself. So when you use Nancy in your application, you get access to that website on a specific URL. There are a couple of sections in diagnostics where you could turn on and off various things in Nancy, like request tracing and view caches and stuff like that. Then you have the request tracing where you can see what's happened for the lifetime of a request. And we have something that we call the interactive diagnostics, which we think is pretty cool. And I think Stephen is more qualified to explain that.
that's the loaded comment. So the interactive diagnostics is something that we will be building more on as we go forwards. But what it basically lets us do is any part of Nancy can have almost a companion class, a child class inside a component. So say the root cache in Nancy, which caches all the potential routes that you can hit, where they go to, that has a companion class inside it with a certain amount of methods. And those methods are actually exposed via the website. So you can go into interactive diagnostics and you can type in sort of /users and press go, and it will show you, it will trace through and show you exactly which routes were hit, which ones were rejected, why they were rejected. So you can sort of diagnose the from that sort of side. And any code that you add, you can also add these companion classes in. So it gets you the ability to poke at the live code. If something does go particularly strange, you can poke in and get some results back and try and figure out what's going on sort of live.
So these companion classes have all the public methods on them are scanned by the diagnostics website and exposed as forms that you can invoke, and it will detect parameters and return values, and you'll actually get strongly typed invocation of those methods, and the result can be rendered using JavaScript templates or use the default templates. So you can build out pretty good tooling for your own websites to inspect your application and poke at it at runtime.
One cool thing I thought while looking at the code here is that the diagnostics modules actually are pretty good demonstration of, you know, I mean, they're very kind of lightweight, and they're all written in Nancy, of course. But, you know, it's a nice way to kind of see how you're building out quite a bit of functionality in very few lines of quite readable code.
Yeah, it's a bit of an Inception app. It's Nancy and Nancy. So,
So how do you handle things like, you know, obviously for this sort of thing, it needs to be authenticated. This is just standard Nancy authentication, or how am I making sure that I'm seeing this and my, you know, users may not be if I don't want them to?
Currently, you can choose what URL it sits on. It defaults to __Nancy, but you can change that to whatever you like. You then set a complex password on it, and you can disable it completely if you don't want it to be active. We did consider doing things like looking at where the request has come from, but that kind of stuff's so easy to spoof. We didn't really bother adding that. But it's just hooked into Nancy in the same way as everything else is. So if you did want to wire it in a completely different way with a different set of security, it's quite straightforward to pull out our default hookups and just do it yourself.
Okay, and then you said that this is easy to customize using either, you know, the view engine or client-side JavaScript templating. So what's the main JavaScript templating thing that you see people using or that you recommend using?
I think we've used, I can't remember what it's called now. It's handlebars, but with a bit of extra logic in it.
Is it iCanHas? I can't remember.
Yeah, actually, I think it is handlebars. I think Mustache is the original one with no logic, and then handlebars put a bit of logic in. So the actual diagnostic app is a backbone app that uses handlebars to do its rendering of the views.
With a Nancy backend.
So next on the list is content negotiation. And this is something that you have added since we talked last. That was one thing that I had asked for differences between this and Web API, and you'd said that was something that you didn't have then and you do have now. Do you have any kind of default content that you handle, or is this something where you just plug in any kind of negotiation you'd want?
Well, from the module point of view, where you actually write your routes, you can basically just return your model. So there's no, you don't have to wrap it up in a specific object and stuff like that for content negotiation to happen. And once the response goes out from your route, we have something we call response processors that will, based on media types and the accept headers that are sending on the request as well. And they'll figure out which one is the most suitable to apply, and it will format the model accordingly and return it to the client. And we also have in the module, we have a more, what should we say? There is a syntax to give you more control on a per route level if you want that as well. Like you could return different models for different media types and things like that.
The processor selection is actually, it's pretty flexible. So every processor gets a chance to get involved. And the decision on which one to pick is based on both the media type that we're trying to serve and also the actual type of the model. So for instance, by default, we ship a JSON and an XML processor. Both of them tell Nancy that they don't care about the model type. If the media type is, for instance, application JSON, then the JSON one will say, I can handle that. I'm the number one guy for application JSON, and that will get picked. If it's sort of application something something plus JSON, so a content type that's based on JSON but not strictly the JSON content type, it will tell Nancy that it can handle it, but it shouldn't be the number one choice. So if you then plug in your processor and either say you're the number one choice for a particular model type or you're the number one choice for that content type, you'll get stepped up the list and get selected automatically. And on top of that, the root syntax that Andreas mentioned, it also lets you, if you need to, specify different models per content type. So content negotiation, I think, is a bit of an oversold demo when it comes to web frameworks. But if, for instance, you were returning a piece of JSON to represent a user, but if somebody requested a JPEG image, for instance, that you might want to bring back their photograph, but rather than include that in the model and weigh the model down and, you know, essentially pull stuff off a disk that you wouldn't need to, you can provide a little bit of syntax in your route that says, if the content type's this, use this model. And that is deferred executed. So we don't even bother trying to pull that data out unless somebody's actually asking for JPEG or PNG or something like that.
Yeah, I agree that I think the I returned a movie or a V card or whatever is kind of a neat demo, but not a real world thing so much. But for me, what I see is the benefit is that there's no serialization or deserialization code coupled with any of the responses.
Yeah, it makes your response nice and small, and then your actual processing code that turns it into a representation to send back to the client is in a different class altogether. So the benefits of using processes, I think, are larger than just content negotiation.
Okay. And I noticed in here that you're using, rather than using like JSON.NET or ServiceStack or one of those, you're using, it looks like, code from like Novell and Mainsoft. So you have kind of different serializers and deserializers there. Can you talk about how you selected your JSON serialization setup?
Basically, cool. It was selected because the Nancy core, Nancy.dll, doesn't have any external dependencies that it brings along. So we needed something that we could embed in our code and make adjustments to. So at the time, the monocode was the most sensible thing to pick up.
Gotcha. And that's a huge difference, right? That's something where you, as a core value, it's portable code. It can be hosted in ASP.NET. It can be hosted in OWN, but also first-rate hosting also in, you know, Mono or where else? What are some of the, I guess, does that cover it?
Well, we don't have a dependency on system.web or anything like that. So you can basically embed Nancy wherever you want. I mean, you could, there are a lot of people that embed Nancy in Windows services because they want a web UI. You could embed it, you know, on the WPF or a WinForm application if you wanted some sort of web hosting in it. I mean, basically, it's just a class that you send in a Nancy request and get a Nancy response back. And what your world looks like outside of that, we don't really care.
I think that's one of the reasons why our testing library is, although it's really nice syntax and really powerful, there's next to no code actually in the testing library itself, because all we basically do is we say to Nancy, here's a request, process this, we get it back. We then look at whatever's returned and allow you to run assertions against the HTML, for example, using sort of CSS selectors to confirm that things exist. And that kind of stuff wouldn't be possible if we were coupled to some other hosting mechanism underneath. But as far as Nancy's concerned, it gets a request type object in and it returns a response type object out. It doesn't really care much more than that.
I see what you're saying. So normally with a lot of web frameworks, ASP.NET, of course, but you're mocking things or stubbing things or kind of working around the idea that, you know, the server is running somewhere and it's got all these dependencies. But what you're saying is, since Nancy is a class that returns, it accepts a request, it returns a response, it's very easy to test on that level.
Yes. Yeah, yes. And the syntax that we give in the testing assembly that we provide is it looks like a web request. So you have a class called a browser, and then you browse the particular URLs, and you can pass in headers and do form posts, that kind of thing. And then your assertions are on what comes back. So you can assert that a particular tag exists in the HTML. You can assert that the JSON model contains a certain value, things like that. So it's sort of it's an end-to-end test, but without involving the browser.
I just want to point out that even though we embed the mono JSON stuff, it doesn't mean you're forced to use that, because along the super duper happy path, the mono one is the sensible default, but you can plug in any serializer if you want. There is an interface you can implement, and Nancy will respect that interface. And we ship NuGets for other serializers as well. You could use JSON.NET by installing a NuGet, or you can use this service stack serializer. If you want to use a protobuf serializer, you can hook that up. So you're not tied down to that specific one that we ship. It's there, just there for the default.
And in order to hook those up, all you need to do is install the package. Nancy will discover them automatically, and they will take precedence over the built-in ones.
So by installing the package, what's entailed there? Like, let's say I want to create my own custom, serializer or other processor. How do I make that available?
So you basically have the iSerializer interface that we implement, and I think it only has two methods. It's basically a can-do pattern, so it will be asked if it can support a specific format, and if it can, then it will be asked to perform the operation. And if you implement that, then Nancy will scan and find your iSerializer and wire it up.
So about the Coneg serialization stuff, is there any tooling, any help if you want to do things like generate links, like hyperlinks between your entities? So for example, your model class has an ID. When you spit that out, you want to turn that into a, a hypermedia link. How would you do that sort of thing in Nancy?
Currently, that's down to implementing your own processor.
Okay.
But we do accept pull requests, Kevin.
Would that be like a model specific processor or
the way I see that the model specific side coming in is for things like that. If you have something where a model or a base class on a set of models, for instance, then you can piggyback either one another serializer and inject some information into it, or you will take precedence if you choose to say that you support this model directly.
And then, are people sharing processors? Like, are there some common processors that are not part of the core, but are shared by the community?
I think most people seem to use JSON more than anything. I know somebody wrote one for serving PNGs and JPEGs, I think. I mean,
we have one guy that built one for serving PDFs, I know.
Yeah, but I mean, they're so trivial to write. If you've got something that will turn a class into a stream or a set of binary data to send to the client, the actual processor implementation is about three lines of code. So actually sharing them out, there isn't a great deal of value in them because they're so simple to write.
Okay, so let's talk about localization, which is always that's always been a difficulty, I think, in ASP.NET. How do you handle it in ANSI?
Well, we just added that feature, and it actually came as a community contributions by Jonathan and Shannon. Basically, what we did is we have our own context, obviously, the Nancy context, and we wanted a current culture on that because that's like the linchpin of it all. So what he came up with a bit of discussion with us was we added a set of conventions that are invoked to determine what culture the current request should be served as. And those, we ship a bunch of defaults, like checking for query string values, checking part of the URL. I can't remember all. There are like five, six of them. And these are all customizable. So you could add your own conventions, or you can strip out the ones that are there and put in your own if you want to, say, check on the current user, what he has for culture settings in the database or whatever. And then because the context is available everywhere, we can use the culture for things like a culture-aware model binding, for instance. So you get the right date formatting and stuff. And then we added a helper on our view base class that is called text. And what that actually does is return a dynamic object. So you do text.foo.bar. It will actually go and try and fetch a localized string value for the key foo.bar. And it does that by going back to another interface called iTextResource. And it gets sent the key and the context, and it says, give me the string for this value, and it returns it. And you can implement your own text resources if depending on where you want to stick your localized data. And the default one is for embedded resources, so it will scan for embedded resources. And the interesting part with the dynamics is you can, you're not restricted to the foo.bar syntax. It can be whatever dot notation you want because it's a dynamics. You can chain it for as much as you want. And just by implementing a new iText resource, you could swap it out and go and find your resources in a database or, I don't know, query Google Translate to get the correct translation.
Our view location conventions are also culture aware now. So if you are looking for a view called user, for instance, and your locale is set to ENGB, for example, if you've got a user-EN-GB view, that will take priority over the generic view. So there's quite a few pieces to the puzzle, but it's worked out quite nicely, I think, and it's quite flexible and quite powerful.
And the default with the text resource, text resource embedded resource files, it also uses the same convention. So it will try and find the localized resource. And if you can't, we'll use the standard fallback that are provided by the resource manager.
Okay, so you support resource files, the standard .NET resource files. Are there other ways of localization or other formats or places that people would store information like that, resources?
The most common one would probably be a database.
Okay, so then to implement that, would it be kind of the same? How would you plug that in? Or is there a way that would fit in with your localization system?
So to do that, you implement an iText resource. So basically, you just implement that interface, and I believe it only has a public indexer on it, and it gets the key and the context. So based on that, you can apply your own conventions for how you want to look it up. Like for instance, the resource one, when you get the key, it expects it to be in the foo.bar format, where foo specifies the name of the resource file you want to look in, and bar would specify the actual key name in that resource file. But that's just a convention that the resource-based implementation used. And whatever convention you want to use in your own implementation, that's totally up to you. I mean, you could apply the same schema if you want. So foo would represent the table, perhaps, and bar would represent the key you're looking up. I mean, it's open-ended.
Okay. You know, so it's interesting. I was just at CodeMash this past week, and I was talking to Jeremy Miller about their FUBU MVC release, and which in passing, they're 1.0 and you guys are 0.1 what? So you really have to roll to 1.0 sometime.
We're not too far off.
But it's interesting. He was talking about the processor, like they have a processor system, and I think it's called processors, but the idea that it's kind of plug in. And it was reminding me a little bit of you know, the same kind of feel. I mean, have you looked at FUBU MVC, or are there some similarities or differences that you've seen?
I've personally never written a FUBU application in my life.
Yeah.
And that's not because I think it's a bad framework. I mean, I know Jeremy and the guys probably have done an excellent job on it, but I can personally say that I haven't checked the source code at all.
Okay. Yeah, I was just curious. It seems to be a really useful working pattern. He was saying that, you know, it's taken a while to get things kind of lined up and all working, but once you've got this, you know, good kind of like layering and pipeline sort of system set up. It's really flexible and really dynamic. And I can see that as I'm looking at, you know, what's new in Nancy, that, you know, adding a new feature in, like, it kind of fits in pretty smoothly. It doesn't look like there are major refactorings in order to add in features.
That comes from early design decisions. Like, we put in dependency container very early on. So the entire framework is built on the fact that there is a container around. So you can just wire up new things and dependencies will be resolved. So adding new stuff in is quite easy. And we also built our own pipeline system. And a lot of our features are built on that pipeline capability, like authentication and the diagnostic stuff is also just a pipeline hook. Yeah. So things like session stuff you can hook up on the pipeline. I mean, caching is pipeline. It's a lot easier when you got the pipelines to hook stuff up on.
So that's funny. That was my next question, was about dependency injection and IOC. And I noticed that you're using Tiny IOC, which is actually a separate release, right?
Yeah, it was originally written probably about 3 years ago, something like that, for other things. That was my first real involvement with Nancy way back when, was the bootstrapper approach and the container. Because I felt at the time that what I was trying to do with Tiny IOC kind of fitted in with the kind of happy path that Andreas was looking at with Nancy, and the two kind of came together. But it is only the default, as with everything else. We ship NuGets for, you know, structure map and autofac and inject and all the other popular containers. But out of the box, we do automatic dependency resolution. So if your module takes a dependency on an IFU, we'll go and find the IFU for you, spin it up and inject it. You don't have to configure the container at all. It's all just part of the sort of get up and go defaults that we try and provide.
Can you describe Tiny IOC for some, like, if this was something I wanted to use in a separate application, how do I get started, or how would you compare it to other IOC systems?
Yeah, I mean, it's fairly lightweight. It was always designed to be a single CS file that you just drop into your project. It's not a separate assembly. It was always designed to be portable. So at the time, it worked on the old Windows Mobile. It worked on Silverlight. It worked on, you know, every platform that I could find to run tests against, it ran against. Currently, it runs on Windows Phone, WinRT. It runs on Monotouch, Monodroid. So the idea is you just sort of drop it, the CS file, straight into your project. It's got a sort of fluent syntax for registering dependencies and resolving them, although most of the time you'll use sort of constructor injection. But one of the things that it does do is the auto-registration. So just with one line, you can tell it to scan the app domain or all of the assemblies that you've got loaded, and it will match up interfaces with implementations. So that's one of the things that we run on Nancy Startup by default. So if you do take a dependency on an IFU, the container will know that you have a MyFU that implements IFU. It will spin it up, fill in any dependencies that it needs, and then pass it into your module for you.
Was that difficult in order to, like, both for IOC, for Tiny IOC and also for Nancy, you know, running on multiple platforms, running on, as you've mentioned, like, you know, the Windows Phone and RT and Mono? What are some of the challenges you run into with cross-platform?
Monotouch was the first really tricky one, I think, because it didn't allow any JIT compilation, so you couldn't compile any expressions or anything like that on the fly. But it's just a case of, I'd written what I called the platform tests, which basically cover all the basic functionality in a single class that gets dropped into, in this example, a Monotouch project. Stuck a button on the page, ran it, saw what failed, tried to figure out what failed. So at the top of the Tiny OC file, there's quite a few if defs and things like that to try and get things working. I think the biggest ball ache out of the lot was RT, because of the reflection changes, moving the type descriptor and that kind of stuff around. So that was probably the biggest change I had to make to support an individual platform.
Is there, like, if defs all over the code? Like, how did you manage that?
There's not
too
many. Or are
there separate versions of the CS files?
No, it's all one CS file. So basically at the top, there's a set of defined based on what the platform supports. So whether you can compile expressions, whether expressions are in there at all, because it did run at one point on the compact framework, which didn't support any kind of expressions. And then depending on what's defined in your project, depending on the platform, it turns various things on and off. So there's probably six or seven areas in the code where there's an if def, where there's a It either removes methods completely because there's just no way to get them to compile, or it takes a slightly slower path to resolve the dependencies, for instance, if it can't do something a bit quicker. It's one of those projects that I never, ever would have been able to write without unit testing. I think there's about, there's probably a few hundred unit tests. And it's one of those things, you make one change and three tests fail. And it's like, well, I didn't have the tests then. I never would have realized that I'd broken something.
Yeah. It's, I noticed too, you've got some logic in there for ignoring assemblies like, Microsoft System, but also things like, Code Rush or, other test frameworks and things too.
Yeah, I mean, the problem with automatically scanning the app domain is when you use things like test runners, they tend to bring an awful lot of baggage with them. And sometimes some of these test runners, I assume for speed optimizations, do very strange things with the app domain and shadowing of files and things like that. So you can actually get type load exceptions thrown if you try and scan the assemblies that are loaded. So we've hit a few of those along the way, and we exclude them.
And obviously, those big, some of them are quite large as well, and you'll never expect to find NANSI-related code in them, so there's no point in scanning them. It will just add to your startup time.
Okay.
Yeah, if we get NANSI code in system core, then we know we've made it.
Made it or jump the shark. And one other thing, and I don't want to derail too much, but I also noticed Tiny Messenger. I don't think we talked about that before. So the description here is a lightweight event aggregator messenger for loosely coupled communication. Is that something that you're using in NANSI as well?
No, that's not in NANSI. That was I wrote that alongside Tiny OC many moons ago. But yeah, it's pretty much an event aggregator. I used it in WPF apps many moons ago.
Okay. So as you're mentioning WPF, obviously there's the standard kind of build a service, run it on, Windows and IIS or as a service or whatever. But then you mentioned like WPF. So I'm wondering, can you mention some other implementations you're seeing of NANSI?
Well, I think we've got a few people that use it embedded in an application to provide sort of an admin interface to it. So that would be sort of your WPF example. We've got people that use it to provide sort of mobile phone support from an application. We've got people running it on things like the Raspberry Pi, for instance. It runs quite well on that, sitting behind Nginx. So we put a request out quite recently, actually. So anyone that's listening that doesn't follow us on Twitter, if anybody is using NANSI for anything, whether it's a pet project or a work project, we'd like to know, to be honest, because even if we're not allowed to use you as a case study, we're interested to know what people are doing with it. So
it's one of those things that you almost always get told when stuff doesn't work, but you're never told when it works. So you never get to hear the success stories.
So you need to drop in some bugs from time to time. Okay, how about some questions from Twitter? We've got one from Jim Liddell, and he asked, where do you see NANSI in 5 years' time?
It's a tough one. hopefully still around. And yeah, it's a really tough question. I mean, where will you be in 5 years?
Where do you see NANSI in 6 months' time? Where are you going in the future?
What's on the roadmap? Maybe.
Yeah.
I think roadmap wise, we're not too far off from 1.0. I think two of the big changes that are left to do are we're going sort of all in on Owen, and we're going to piggyback on the Katana project. I don't know whether you guys have covered that before or not.
Mm-mm.
And the other one is the can of worms that is async support.
So let's talk about those briefly. I see some work in progress on Owen. Is it partly working? Is it just started? Where are you at?
Well, way back we were the first framework, I think, to fully support the previous specification of Owen, which was a delegate from hell syntax. So we supported that. Then there was Kayak that supported that, and that worked. It worked well. We sort of took a step back because we implemented it in the wild. We came across a few issues, went back to the group, and there was resistance, shall we say, to some of the things that we were asking for, despite the fact that they were real world use cases. So we took a step back, or I spat my dummy out, whichever way you want to look at it. And then recently it's kind of had a bit of a reboot. The syntax is a lot better than it was. It's now task based. It feels much more .NET-y. Then Microsoft have started their Katana work, which is, for those who aren't aware of what it is, it's Microsoft implementing Owen, so you can host Owen applications and middleware on the Microsoft hosting platforms, which sounds like a mouthful, but it basically means it's Owen adapters for IIS, HTTP listener, that kind of thing. You've always been able to use Owen as a HTTP listener. There's not a huge amount of code involved to write a simple one. But the advantage of the Katana side of it is, because it's going to come from Microsoft, it will be well tested. It will be tested under heavy loads, that kind of thing. So it's going to be sort of a very much a production ready Owen implementation. So we plan to sit on top of that. So currently our hosting packages, we've got ASP.NET. We've got self-hosting, got WCF, you know, things like that. Now, we intend to strip out virtually all of the code from that and make them meta packages if we can. So if you install nancy.hosting.asp.net, that will pull down Nancy. It will pull down nancy.owen, which is a series of helper functions more than anything. It will then pull down Microsoft's Katana bits to do the ASP.net side of Owen and then plug it all together for you. So there won't actually be any code in our ASP.NET package. Well, that's the plan anyway.
All right. So that's the not so easy, but slightly easy one. How about async? As part of this, you mentioned in passing that the new Owen spec is using task everywhere. So that seems like doing one would kind of do the other.
Yeah. So the way Owen works now is when you get a request in, you return a task, and then you complete the task as and when the request is done, and you squiddle away the response somewhere in a dictionary. So it's quite straightforward, the Owen specification now. Nancy's always been sort of synchronous only, as far as there was no sort of async await support. You return a response directly, which is great if you're returning JSON, that kind of things. There's no real reason to go async there. If you want to do requests off the server, so if for whatever reason you want to do HTTP requests elsewhere, do a few of those using the new async await syntax, then that's a piece of the puzzle that we're currently missing. So that is working. What we're doing with that is slightly different to what we've done with the previous Nancy releases, in that it's written and it's working. But what we're trying to do is, we've got a set of people together who use Nancy a lot in the wild, and we're going to give it to them to try their current applications out sort of privately first, because it's something that may break existing code. So we want to make sure we limit that to as few bugs as possible. Then once we're happy that it's not going to break people, then we'll do sort of an open beta with it, so more people can kick the tires. And then once we're happy with it, then we'll push it out. But the syntax is exactly the same, really. So the delegates that you use in normal Nancy application, they're going to look exactly the same, but you stick an async keyword in front of them. And then you can do awaits inside it, and it will just handle it for you.
Okay. We had another question from Philip W. He writes tons of posts on ASP.NET Web API. That's how I know him, but he's quite active. And he asked a question here: why tuples instead of classes and structs?
We use them internally. We don't generally expose them externally. I think for me, the main advantage for them is we use them as part of our root resolution, because we have a root object, but then as it gets further up, further through the pipeline, you need to augment it with a bit of extra information. So rather than have a property on the root that doesn't really make sense to be there 99% of the time, we just wrap the root in a tuple with a string or a GUID or something like that and pass it around internally in that form. It saves a bit of class explosion, but returning them outside of the internals, I don't generally like, because they're not particularly obvious. You just get a string, a GUID, and an object, and you've got no idea what they are because you can't name them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think we have any public-facing tuples, not as return values or parameters.
Yeah, you know, the whole tuple slash tuple thing with .NET is weird. I they're not used all that much, it seems like. One reason is because I'm not sure how to pronounce them, and I don't know, maybe other people aren't as well. But also, there's not like a first-class syntax for them yet. Like, it would be nice, you know, if it was more like, it felt like it was built into the C# language, for instance, and you didn't have to say new tuple and then blah blah blah. Do you agree?
I think F#. I think you can actually sort of implicitly cast back and forth from mm-hmm. classes and interfaces back to tuples and then back again. And if C# had that, then that'd be great. You could use them internally, and then if somebody wanted to, you know, cast them to a class further down the line, then you could do. But yeah, that they're a little bit clunky in C#, but we find them useful in certain scenarios internally.
Okay. We had another question from Christopher Klaas, and he asked, how do you determine when something is too much ceremony? Gut feeling, set of rules, do you talk, do you compare with other frameworks?
Yes.
Less ceremony than us is too little. More ceremony than us is too much. That's pretty much the standard, I think, that everyone should adopt. I mean, it is a good feeling.
It comes down to what we want to use. I mean, we don't like writing code that doesn't fill a purpose. So if the framework can do it for us, then please do it.
Yeah, I mean, there have been a few features that the actual technical implementation has been, you know, say an hour's work. And then there's been 3 days of fighting the compiler to try and get a syntax that we're happy with. So we're pretty hot on trying to give a syntax that we think feels nice. It's nice to write, but also nice to read as well. You know, so the syntax, for instance, in Nancy for stating that your module is secure and it requires authentication is you just type this dot requires authentication. So even if you've never read Nancy code before, you've never written any Nancy code, you should be able to scan down a module and you say, oh, that's quite obvious. It needs authentication, you know, as you read down. So that's the kind of thing we strive for, really.
And you'd mentioned before on the previous podcast that you use extension methods quite a bit. Is that still kind of a guiding thing that you have a lot of extension methods in your implementation?
Yeah, I think that's a fair statement. I mean, we use them quite a lot. We try to use quite a lot of language features that are in C# 4 at least,
mm-hmm.
like dynamics and stuff like that as well.
Yeah, that's funny. That was another question that we got from Cranial Strain, who is really in Battersby, and he said, why dynamics and don't just say fluency?
Fluency.
But again, it comes down to providing a syntax that's readable. For instance, if you want to get a query string parameter out, you do request dot query dot your query string parameter name. So request dot query dot ID, for instance. I mean, it reads a lot better than doing dictionary access or having some weird object come back.
Mm-hmm. And we're back.
And you can do a dictionary-based access if you want as well, so you don't have to use it, the dynamic one. But it comes down to the kind of syntax and the way you can express yourself with code.
Yeah, I mean we don't do dynamic everywhere. But yeah, there's times when it gives you if you do a few tricks with dynamic, it gives you a syntax that you just wouldn't be able to get otherwise with C#.
Okay.
And I'll be honest. We do have a funk of dynamic in Nancy. So. We do actually have that.
It doesn't do anything. It just sounds cool, so we just put it.
Yeah.
We need a tuple of a funk of a dynamic of a dynamic.
Right, exactly. It's kind of like the CSS, you know, wrap it in a div. Here, if you can just wrap it in a funk of a dynamic of a tuple, then you're all set. Yeah, and, you know, really kind of with that, it's reminding me of the, you know, like dictionaries of dictionaries is part of what made the original Owen a little bit annoying / difficult. You know, all the delegates of dictionaries are not as easy to read or write as, you know, a more dynamic implementation.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote our initial Owen host on the previous spec, and once you'd actually split it up into bite-sized chunks, it wasn't actually that complicated. But when you read the delegate, it was ridiculous. It was funk of action of dictionary of funk of action of T, and yeah, I've got a 24-inch widescreen monitor. I don't think it would fit across the monitor for a single line.
All right.
I think it pushed the limits of the compiler a bit.
Yeah, there should be like an FX cop on that, right? It should barf. There's too much inception there. We had another question from Toby Tobson, and he asked, are there any tutorials for developers without a background in web development, or should they look elsewhere?
I mean, I think we're pretty easy to pick up whether you know the web or not. I know HMemCopy, I can't remember his name in real life off the top of my head.
Egal, I think.
Yeah. He's never been a web developer, I believe he said, but he picked Nancy up in no time at all. And one of the reasons was because we're so sort of close to HTTP and the syntax is quite terse, is it doesn't take a huge amount of reading to understand that there's some verbs in HTTP. There's no state involved. It's a request and a response. And then from that, you can pretty much write an ANSI application straight away. And then from there, if you want to add authentication, look in the documentation. It's sort of a single line to enable it, a single line to secure a module. So it's the kind of thing I think you can learn ANSI piecemeal quite easily.
Okay. And then one more Twitter question. We've got another one from Jim Liddell, and he asked, how do you view Nancy in relation to other frameworks like OpenRasta?
I mean, personally, I think Nancy's one solution to a set of problems, and OpenRasta is one, and FUBU is one. I'm not a believer of the silver bullet. And I mean, we provide our interpretation of how we think these problems should be solved. But that said, we're not saying that Nancy is the universal solution to everything. We've on multiple occasions told people that Nancy probably isn't the best fit and they should look to FUBU or OpenRasta.
I think it's all down to what makes you not only productive, but what makes you sort of a happy developer. I mean, I mentioned this to Scott Hanselman in an email recently. It's not that we're saying everybody should move from MVC or Web API to Nancy. We're trying to say that try Nancy, see if it fits for you. Try FUBU, try Simple Web, try OpenRasta, try all the alternatives and use what makes you productive and makes you actually want to code. Because I'm sure everybody on the call at some point has got a bit of a developer sort of down in the dumps about what they're developing, and you just get disinterested and stuff. And it's nice to sort of get your mojo back by using something, you know, a bit more fun, a bit more interesting. You know, I mean, even if you go outside the .NET space, you know, there's plenty of people that dabble in Node and Rails and things like that, even if they go back to MVC when they want to do a sort of a production website. So just try the alternatives and then use what makes you happy. And if it's not Nancy, you're wrong.
So one of the sort of higher level web development features that it doesn't look like Nancy supports currently is asset management, sort of the asset pipeline sort of thing that Rails provides for, you know, minification and script combining and all that sort of stuff. Is that something that you would see on the roadmap for Nancy?
Originally, I spec'd out putting that into Nancy. But then we hooked into Paul Betts' Sass and Coffee sort of about 12 months or so ago. I think that project's fallen by the wayside slightly. But there's also the support for Cassette, which does something similar. And recently somebody's written a few extension methods for Squishit, which does another thing, something similar. It's one of those things that I think external things will do a better job of than potentially we will. So because our pipeline is so flexible, it's extremely easy for these things to plug into Nancy, you know, with a relatively small amount of code. As long as they stay clear of system web dependencies, they can be as portable as we are. So we do have sort of basic static file support, but beyond that, we'll leave it to third parties to plug in, I think.
Fair enough. And what about things like WebSocket support?
Use SignalR. I mean, okay. that's one of the examples that, you know, occasionally we get asked whether people can do WebSockets on Nancy. And the answer is, well, why? There's certainly once Owen starts to take off more and Katana starts to take off more, it's extremely easy to have an application hosted on IIS where Nancy takes control, for instance, of the root of the website, serves your pages. But then if anyone goes to /realtime, for instance, it will route straight through to a SignalR instance. Then you could put something else on a different address space. So it's extremely easy to pull these things together and compose them once you start running on Owen. So that's one thing that's quite exciting about moving on to the Owen stack completely.
Okay. Anything else you want to cover in closing here?
We have an online store now if anyone wants to buy any Nancy swag. That's one of our key differentiators between us and Web API. We've got hoodies.
And a cooler logo. Cooler logo to go with it. Awesome.
There was a question on Twitter on how much time we spend each week on Nancy, and I mean.
Yeah, there was. So from Daniel Lee, he asked, how many hours a week do you spend on Nancy, and the ratio of reviewing pull requests versus writing new features?
In sense of time, probably way too much. Let's just leave it at that. I mean, having a quote-unquote successful open source project doesn't make you the most social person, maybe.
How about that thing about the ratio of pull requests versus new features?
I think we tend to get into a habit of we ignore all the pull requests while we've got our heads in a new feature that we're interested in. We'll get that written. Then we'll go back to GitHub and see this massive stack of pull requests that we need to review. It's a brilliant problem to have, but it is very difficult to manage. I mean, we do have a number of repeated committers now who obviously not only do they get the kind of syntax we're striving for, but they fit in with Andreas's style cop fascist opinions. So If you want to annoy Andreas, just send him a snippet of code with the usings outside the namespace, and it'll. Yeah.
It doesn't matter how cool the feature is, that won't make it in.
All right. One thing you said in passing towards the end was that, you know, it's people get bored and it's fun and exciting to try out new things and different things, Nancy definitely being one of them. And I really felt that when I worked with it. It was a nice, clean, it was different and fun. And I'm wondering what sort of things, you know, outside of Nancy, you two are finding that are different and fun in your development stuff of late.
We've both been playing in Mongo recently. I think we're both quite big fans of that. We're actually building a demo site at the moment, or Andreas is doing it more than I am, to sort of showcase any demos. So if people put demos on GitHub and then put a source package into NuGet, it will kind of automatically discover those and show them a bit of information. And that's got a Mongo back end. So I know Andreas has been quite a fan of Mongo HQ and things over the last short period of time.
Yeah, so far the Mongo experience has been really fun to work with, and looking forward to spending more time with it.
Are you going to support build in better support for time zone calculations in Nancy?
Send us a pull request.
Time zones are hard, man.
We need a hurting code like music thing for send us a pull request, or we take pull requests.
I mean, time zones are easy.
Yeah, just follow GMT.
Or you post a Stack Overflow and John Skeet answers you. It's that easy.
Right. Well, yeah. What about like Noda time? Is that usable there?
I haven't looked at it personally. But
this could be a local optimization that I may have to make where I actually translate them.
I tend to find a watch tends to help as well.
All right. On that note, I think we should wrap up. Andreas needs to get to the store.
Yes.
All right. Okay. Well, thanks a bunch. It was great talking to you. And if not before then, let's talk again in a year and hear where Nancy's at.
Awesome.
Thank you for having us.
All right. That's all the time we have this week on Herding Code. We'll talk to you again soon.